Hi everyone, Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to Top of the Morning on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. Reflecting back on last week, it was an eventful one in the markets with important inflation data released as well as the Fed's decision at the FOMC meeting. In addition, the snap French elections also added some political risk to the mix. So joining us on this Monday morning to discuss what this all means for the markets, glad to welcome back Jason Dreho, the head of asset allocation for the Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office. Jason, great to be back with you to kick off another trading week. Thank you for dropping by and looking forward to our conversation.
Good morning, Dan. It's great to be here. Happy Monday.
So, Jason, let's begin with the market price action last week, which you note in your most recent blog. A title is Connecting Other Dots. You noted how that development was interesting. From your vantage point, what was interesting about it?
Well, the S&P 500 hit an all-time high on Thursday, another one. And so that would give the impression that the markets are doing great. But underneath the kind of headline number, if you look at the performance across sectors and styles and sizes, it was definitely a different story. It was a pretty concentrated and narrow rally. You know, tech once again led the performance, but also kind of large cap quality, which tends to overlap with tech stocks. Momentum as a factor, which is again dominated by tech stocks, they did well. The value stocks, cyclicals, small, they were all down for the week. And in fact, if we go back really for the past month since mid-May, it really is this bifurcation between tech stocks in particular, quality stocks, you're doing well. As a result, the S&P is doing well, but value and small are actually down over the past month. So that's kind of the equity story, despite the all-time high for the S&P. For rates, they were down about 20 basis points across the entire Treasury curve. Made sense in light of the inflation data surprising to the downside. Also, you know, given what's going on in France, a little bit of kind of spillover effect there. But so rates went lower. And then finally, the U.S. dollar was up last week about 60 basis points. And if you go back to just a couple of days prior to that, on June 7th, we got May payrolls. Since the payrolls report has come out, which was a strong headline number, the dollar is up against the basket of currencies almost 1.5%. So you add this all up, it sort of makes sense at a headline that, you know, the equities have done well given the headline data, payrolls and CPI, you know, going in the right direction, strong payrolls, declining inflation. But the overall characteristics of the market collectively across different asset classes looks almost more risk off than it does risk on. You know, equities are up, yes, but a lot of the markets were down, and it was a narrow, you know, rally that was kind of skewed towards defensive and quality stocks. Yields were down, and the U.S. dollar strengthened. That's typically what happens in a risk-off environment. You know, part of the factor is that the politics, as I alluded to, were disturbing kind of, you know, this dynamic. The surprise announcement for French elections that will take place start on June 30th and then follow up on July 7th in terms of a sequence of electoral process. You know, that has certainly surprised the markets because it creates sort of uncertainty of how that election could play out, kind of put that risk a little bit of, and bringing back some of these questions about kind of, you know, the Eurozone overall as an entity. Keep in mind the snap election is coming on the heels of elections in Mexico and India that had surprising results that caused big market reactions. So investors are certainly highly attuned to election risks. Given a little bit of the uncertainty this means for France, for the Eurozone, there might have been a bit of a safe haven bid for U.S. assets last week, which would help, you know, strengthen the dollar, would help bond yields decline as people bid up the prices for bonds, and even to some extent maybe support the tech story as investors look for kind of high quality stocks. So it looked like it was a good week for equities, and it was for the index level, but the overall story of the markets actually feels a little more, you know, risk off than risk on.
So, Jason, another factor that you had mentioned in the blog was that investors may actually be more worried about growth than inflation. Why do you think that is, and what's your outlook for both?
If we go back a couple of months, the concern was about the economy perhaps overheating. Growth wasn't coming down. Inflation was very sticky in the Q1. We zoom forward a couple of months. And what we've seen is, you know, for April, the inflation data came in line with expectation and showed moderation. And then last week, with the CPI data, but also PPI and import prices, all surprised to the downside. So the disinflation expectations that investors have, those have been reinforced. You know, the inflation data basically was unambiguously, you know, good news. So I think there's a kind of more comfort with the inflation story. That's also augmented by the fact that there's a little bit more concern about the kind of growth outlook. You know, after those, you know, overheating, no landing concerns that surfaced in early April, since the end of April for the past 7-8 weeks, we've seen economic data, by and large, surprise to the downside, been sort of somewhat disappointing. In a lot of ways, the data is subject to interpretation. So if you take the labor market, headline payrolls number, strong, exceeding expectations, but a lot of other data points for the labor market, whether it's job openings, quit rates, the unemployment rate ticking higher, suggests definitely much more kind of cooling. And then last week on Thursday, we got initial claims data for like new initial jobless claims. They were the highest they were since last August, and they've been ticking higher the past few weeks. Others might be concerned about the strength of the consumer. Could they be kind of running out of steam? We get a data point on Friday of the University of Michigan Consumer Sentiment Index. It declined throughout the last month and well below expectations. This is coming after April retail sales data was also kind of somewhat flat. So you add that up, you can look at the growth data and certainly see signs of cooling, but also be concerned that maybe it's slowing more rapidly. So even though the consensus view is in a soft landing, there's some evidence that would suggest, and the market pricing is consistent with that, that the people don't have really truly believed that the soft landing will kind of go smoothly, that in growth like holds up, inflation comes down, and the Fed is able to cut rates. What we need to help comfort that, and it begins this week, is retail sales data that we get on Tuesday, the 18th for May. Then at the end of the month on the 28th, we get personal consumption expenditure data for May. That's broader based than retail sales, which skews heavily towards goods. What we've seen so far is credit card data for May suggests it's reason for sort of cautious optimism, and it was still solid. Travel at the end of May was at record levels over Memorial Day weekend. A lot of that's going to be classified as services. So that's why the PC data at the end of the month is critical. And then, in early July, on July 5th, you will get the June payrolls report. That could also kind of push back against some of the other kind of labor market cooling. So we would get all this data might suggest, yes, we're getting moderation in growth, but the growth is still solid. And if that's the case, that would certainly alleviate some of these concerns. But the narrative has changed a lot over the past couple of years in terms of what the market's most concerned with. And right now, it actually seems to be more concerned with growth than with inflation.
So, of course, do have to spend a few moments on the Fed. I do recall last Wednesday, Jason, us as well as our colleague Brian Rose had joined our listeners for a CIO First Take podcast on the outcome, though definitely worth revisiting as the outcome of the FOMC meeting, not exactly as expected with the dot plot now showing only one rate cut here in 2024. So remind us, Jason, what is your interpretation of the outcome?
Well, as we mentioned on that podcast, kind of the immediate reaction was surprised at how the Fed, the median dot from the FOMC committee members went from implying three cuts this year to one. The consensus going into Wednesday was that it'd be two, and then after the CPI data came in below expectations, I think that kind of further reinforced that it's going to be two cuts. So the one cut was a surprise, and it does kind of bring the question, there's not a good reason why the Fed couldn't keep their options open by kind of going to two. They could always, drop that an extra cut in September rather than having to maybe kind of walk that back and introduce a potential cut in September and the guidance before. That being said, where we are, now here on Monday morning is the markets have kind of basically looked through the dots. They're still pricing nearly two cuts by December and about a 65% chance in September. So the question is why is that the case? Why is the market kind of looking through that the Fed dots? Some of it is that Fed Chair Jay Powell kind of downplayed them during his press conference. He said that the dots, these projections are not a committee planner or any kind of a decision, and said a lot of committee members were kind of finally balanced between going to one to two. So it was a fine balance there. As a result of those comments, there is kind of speculation that Powell himself is at two cuts and didn't really push aggressively this time to try and get that to be the median. There's also a view that the Fed didn't have a lot of time to digest the CPI data, and certainly not at all the PPI data that came out on Thursday or import prices on Friday, to get a full scope of where is the kind of economy going. Had they done that, perhaps the dots would look a little bit different, and therefore we can just almost sort of downplay them as being a little bit stale. And a third factor is all the Fed really did was shift, one cut from this year to one more cut next year. So instead of two cuts this year, then three next year, it's now the dots imply one cut this year and four next year. So by the end of next year, it's still 125 basis points of cuts. So that didn't really change. And it's not clear that moving 3 months back, if that's what this entails, really changes the overall story for what the Fed's going to do, the path for rates going forward, and therefore what it means for risk assets. And frankly, then if we really bottom line it, ultimately still the Fed is very much data dependent. And so they can change its expectations, but if the data evolves in one way or another, it could pull forward when they start to cut or even push out further, you know, when they start to cut into next year. We ultimately think the data is going to evolve in a way that gives them a valid reason to cut. So inflation will continue to go lower, but also you might see kind of moderation of growth and further cooling the labor market. That would allow them to do maybe an insurance cut in September rather than waiting until December. That's why we still expect two cuts. But whether it's us or I think the Fed, we're all sort of data dependent. And you know, if the data goes the way we expect, they cut. If not, then you know, what is the Fed's projection right now? And probably wait until December. That's the more likely outcome.
If we tie this all into positioning considerations, Jason, just given the economic outlook, the outlook for monetary policy from the Fed, combined as well with the geopolitical risks you had noted, what does this all mean for CIO's investment outlook from here?
Well, you know, it's really easy to kind of overanalyze every single data point, every utterance, you know, from Fed officials. So when that happens, I think you kind of just step back and look at the kind of the big picture. And the big picture looks, you know, pretty good. The global fundamentals are trending in the positive direction. You've seen the global cycle at earnings revision globally kind of inflecting higher. In some way, like the global cycle, you can see that more outside of the U.S. where it had a slowdown. It's sort of picking up in certain parts of the developed world. If anything, the U.S. is a little bit moderating, but overall the trend is in the right direction. And certainly earnings, you know, just in the U.S. alone are kind of reflecting higher. We also have an environment where central banks are cutting rates, or they are buyers to do so, and may you know, do so fairly soon. So it's unusual to have a situation where central banks are cutting rates at a time when the global cycle and earnings are actually going higher. Typically, you're cutting rates when the economy is slowing down, and it's actually rolling over into a recession. So to have growth backdrop being pretty good, in addition to rates going lower, that generally is a positive environment for risk assets you know, overall. Now, against that backdrop of pretty good macro fundamentals, we have this election, you know, uncertainty. It's proven to be a risk event, and maybe more than even investors certainly assumed or were positioned for. And just in the next few weeks, those can either be diminished or escalated, whether it's because of the French elections that happened early July, the UK election on July 4th, and then in the US, the first presidential debate on June 27th. That could add volatility to the markets if it kind of skews things in one direction or another, whether it increases the likelihood of a Trump or a Biden see kind of, you know, win and therefore a red or blue wave. Now, if those election events pass without any sort of real risk materializing, then really the stage is set for the market sort of rally that we've seen this summer to continue, especially if the economic data kind of plays out that way. We think that, you know, inflation will keep coming down, Fed's able to cut by September, but growth is holding up okay. Now, for that rally to really kind of continue and to broaden out, that's kind of a necessary condition for the sustained kind of rally. The house has to happen where investors truly become confident in the soft landing, consisting of lower inflation, solid growth, and insurance rate cuts from the Fed. So from to go higher from here at the index level for equities, you kind of need kind of Goldilocks type of you know, economic data, which is certainly possible, but, you know, that there's you know, also scope for disappointment for the markets to kind of be a little more sideways as we move throughout the summer. So given all that, we still think, you know, quality bonds are, you know, make sense at this point in time. You know, tech stocks, you know, continue to perform. We think they will continue to do well, both almost defensive reasons, but also just kind of the fundamental drivers that are not tied so much to the macro dynamics. So that's another thing that kind of appeals to investors that doesn't require having a lot of faith in the macro playing out the way I'm describing it.
Jason, very productive conversation on this Monday morning. Thank you for sharing with our listeners, our clients, CIO's interpretation of these recent market macro developments, what they mean for the investment outlook from here. And as you cited, a lot of factors that we will continue to track very closely in the weeks and months ahead. Though, as always, Jason, thank you for dropping by Top of the Morning and for spending some time today with our listeners and our clients. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Have a great week.
Likewise. Thank you, Jason. Again, today we have been joined by Jason Dreho, the head of asset allocation for the Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office. I will highlight Jason's blog, which he has been making reference to during today's conversation. Connecting Other Dots is available now up on ubs.com/CIO. For clients of UBS, simply reach out to your UBS financial advisor if you would like to receive a copy of Jason's blog directly. From UBS Studios, I'm Dan Cassidy. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management Business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.